Hello and welcome to UK Health Radio and welcome to my show Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio. My name is Dora Walsh and I've been working in the field of natural and functional medicine for 14 years. I'm a qualified nutritionist and nutritional therapist and I've been supporting my clients to overcome their chronic health concerns like hormonal imbalance, digestive problems, chronic fatigue, autoimmunity and skin problems for many years. You can find out more about me on my website, nutriheal.net, and also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Well, this week, we're going to be talking about preventative health. Now, preventative health is the stuff you do before you get sick. You do it in order to stay healthy, and it's so important now with rising cancer rates, different viruses that are around, and we need to arm ourselves more than ever with the tools, the understandings, and the techniques of what we can do for ourselves on all levels to prevent disease and stay healthy and hopefully stay out of hospital. It could be in using proactive screening, counseling, maintenance, eating well, lifestyle strategies, reducing toxins in your life. There's so many things that are involved in preventative health and it's important to take action. Well, this week, I'm going to be talking with Victoria Godfrey. She's an ex-award-winning producer, a naturopathic nutritionist trained in cancer and now working in nutrigenomics. And she's the co-founder of DNA Pal. And you can find out more about DNA Pal at their website, dnapal.me. And also you can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. We're going to be talking about how prevention is better than cure and also all the steps to put in place to make sure you achieve this. Welcome to the show, Vicky.
Thanks for having me again.
Well, I love talking to you. This is a very hot topic and I know you are an expert in this. You've been working hard, you're trained in cancer. And I'd love to know more about your story because I know you were an award-winning producer. You are an award-winning producer. You've retrained as a naturopathic nutritionist. You've trained in cancer. Now you're working nutrigenomics. You've got your own DNA company providing testing. Tell us about that story and the story of preventative health and how you came to be an expert in that area.
Oh, wow. It's quite a journey. I'll try and keep it not too long for the audience. So I trained at the College of Naturopathic Medicine near Oxford Circus. And while we were studying, I'd always had quite an interest in preventing against cancer because not because cancer runs in my family. I'm quite blessed there that I don't seem to have both sides of the family. We have more like heart disease on both sides of the family. But cancer was always something, as it was rising and rising, I think back then when I was studying, it was 1 in 3 and now it's 1 in 2. So after studying at CNM, and before that, like you said, I was an award-winning producer. I won 12 awards in 6 years and I worked very long hours and I made my body sick working all those hours with stress, too much alcohol, too much partying, play hard, work hard was kind of the motto. And now I kind of realized that play hard, work hard isn't the real motto that's going to keep you healthy for into old age. So after CNM and then going to Birkbeck University to study cancer, study nutrition for cancer for a year, I really realized how much preventative stuff we can really, really do for our bodies for most chronic diseases. It doesn't have to be cancer specific. It could be, you know, autoimmune conditions, chronic inflammation, lots of pain. And it's much easier to prevent than it is to ever reverse by putting the right things in. So I'm just trying to keep it short for you. That's kind of a bit of my journey, really.
It's so important and it's so good to know. Now, obviously you specialised for a whole year on that and it sounds like you wanted to protect your family because it's pretty scary, isn't it, in terms of what could happen?
Yeah, that was the main thing. I think all of my courses that I've ever been, and when I became a yoga teacher, it was so I could understand yoga more and be more preventative because yoga was really helping me manage my migraines and my periods. And then the same with cancer. The reason for signing up for the year's course was purely so I could protect my family. With the rising numbers of 1 in 3 and now 1 in 2, and it's set by 2030 to for the whole world to have a 75% chance of having cancer. That's quite a scary statistic. So even now, it's even more important, you know, right now, it's even more important to be really preventative against chronic disease.
Yeah, prevention is better than cure. We don't want to end up in hospital.
No.
If you've seen a family member in hospital, it's not a nice thing. Pretty scary. Although sometimes it can be hard to be consistent with health practices, eating well, you know, getting enough exercise, keeping your mindset good. It sometimes seems to be a lot of work. But how would you do it? What would be one of the first things you'd put in place if you were to advise somebody on preventing any health problems in the future?
I think, you know, yeah, food is thy medicine and can play a really big part in making us sick or making us not sick. So I always use the petrol and diesel car analogy, that if you're putting diesel into a petrol car, it's not going to run very well. You know, we then have to get the engine cleaned and, you know, spend a lot of money getting that all cleaned. Our bodies are pretty much the same. If we're putting the wrong ingredients in for ourselves, our body's just not going to work very well. And then it's going to get sicker and splutter as we go down the M6 or, you know. So really coming down to the nutrition and making sure you've got lots of fruit and vegetables in your diet. Obviously there's loads of pro-vegans out there, and then there's also the people that, you know, need the meat. I sit very much in, I eat meat and so does my family, and we eat fish, but we make sure that it's really good quality. So it's either grass-fed or only organic, and the same for the fish, it's only wild. Things like that, because I think the food is the starting block. We eat 3 times a day, right? Don't we? So
yeah,
we can all spout about, you know, all the other wonderful things we can do, but the fundamentals, I think, to being healthy really do come down to what you eat 3 times a day, if you're eating 3 times a day, and the nutrition in that, because your cells are sitting there waiting for that nutrition.
Yeah, that's what people need to remember. We kind of divorce off our feelings from our food, but not realizing what we're doing when we're eating. And it's actually, we often do it for pleasure, which is very good. I love that too. But if you can make that connection, Vicky, between, as you say, what you're eating and knowing that you're nourishing those cells,
yes,
3 times a day, then that's an amazing thing that you can do for yourself to prevent disease.
Completely. And I think I saw a post the other day, and it was really interesting because it was just a picture, you know, on Instagram or somewhere, but it really struck with me and I thought I'm going to use that. And it said, every bite of food that you take, as it reaches your mouth and your lips, think, is this food going to nourish me or is this food going to harm me? And I thought that is so simplistic. But if you can ask yourself each time, you know, so if you've got a Kit Kat going in your mouth or a can of Diet Coke, you know, which is essentially lots of chemicals and lots of sugar, is that really, are my cells going to benefit from me ingesting that? Is my blood sugar going to benefit? Is my pancreas going to benefit? You know, and so on.
What about you? Because I know in the past you mentioned your lifestyle in TV. You're an award-winning producer, winning so many different awards over 6 years, and you said it made you ill. How did you make that connection between and really understanding what you're eating and what it was doing to you? Because a lot of people have got no understanding at all. They don't realize that food can heal them and that food can change how their body works, how their mind thinks, how they feel, their energy. They just don't make that connection at all until they get sick. And even when they get sick, they still haven't made the connection. And that's the problem. So how did you make that connection?
Actually, studying nutrition helped me make that connection. When I was studying yoga, So what happened was I used to go off to India for Christmas, because in the world of TV, Christmas used to close down in December and it would be party, 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 7 nights a week, drink loads. And then I used to run off to India in January for a month to recover from December and the whole year's worth of work and long hours. And while we was in India with my partner, we'd just go and do yoga every day with this yoga teacher on top of this roof, and didn't really think much more about what I was committed to. I always wanted to lose weight whenever I went on holiday, because I was always bloated, I was always overweight, all these things, but I never really connected it back to the food and alcohol that I was drinking. My friends used to call me chunky but funky. You know, you use those excuses, I'm big boned, or my dad's big, you know, all these excuses that you find while you're in this denial. And then I noticed that coming back to London, I wouldn't get a migraine for 6 months. And I go, oh my God. And bearing in mind, since the age of 14, I've had a migraine every single month with my menstrual cycle. So that was a huge change for me. And previous to those years, I'd tried many, many different therapies and different drugs that the doctors had given me, and nothing could work. And suddenly I was going to India for a month and it was stopping my migraines for 6 months. And then
you were eating and your practices.
Yes, because the Indian diet was very much lentils, chickpeas, fresh fish from the sea, lots of big salads and lots of fruit. So the morning, you know, was a pineapple juice or watermelon juice. So you don't get offered processed foods out there. You know, you don't go to fast food. And my life in TV was eating in lovely restaurants, but not always choosing. I'd never go for the fish and salad. I'd always go for the burger or the pizza or the lasagna, you know. Yes, and I ate a lot. I used to get the 4 p.m. slump. So I'd immediately reach for a cup of tea with two sugars, a chocolate bar and a bag of crisps, and then wonder why I had no energy. But I thought it was all because I had a hangover from the night before of out drinking all night with clients till 12 or 1 or 2 in the morning. So you're just in this abusive cycle, I suppose, that I look back now. And I used to think, you know, the NHS say 5 a day. Well, in my burger, I'd always have a piece of tomato and a piece of lettuce. Well, I used to count that one slice of tomato and one slice of lettuce of 2 of my 5 a day.
Oh, gosh, that's not enough. You need a... But so, was that just to make yourself feel better that you were doing something, or did you really not know?
I really didn't know. I really thought, the way I'd been brought up, I really believed that I just thought you ate food because you were hungry and it gave you energy. I didn't even think ever about the cells opening up, wanting to receive nutrients and nutrition and certain vitamins that it needs to operate correctly. Didn't know any of that. So I just, if I was hungry, I'd eat a chocolate bar or a bag of crisps or a white bread sandwich. You know, I got at 34, I was diagnosed with high blood pressure. I'd suffered migraines since I was 14. I looked back to when I was a child growing up. My mum never offered me water. She gave me our White's lemonade to drink. And I can remember being thirsty in the night, running down the stairs, opening the cupboard to glug the R. White's lemonade.
So this is at miles away from the anti-inflammatory diet that nutritionists are so keen on today, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Tell us about that. Is that something you recommend to people as a good starting point in terms of the nutrition?
Yes, I mean, an anti-inflammatory diet is, I see in clinic on a regular basis, it's life-changing for people. I mean, sometimes they still don't really realize why they're doing it or what they're doing it. But when they come back skipping into clinic 6 weeks later, and some haven't been able to, you know, some have got terrible arthritis and they come in and all their joints have inflamed and they're in a lot of pain and they're all kind of huddled over. To see that change in 4 to 6 weeks of people literally skipping back into clinic with pain-free, It's just wonderful. And also organs like gallbladders. And I've saved two gallbladders with an anti-inflammatory diet where the doctors have gone back in for the ultrasound and said, we don't need to take that out now. It looks perfectly normal. Oh, I mean, how fantastic is that?
This is amazing. So talk to us about the anti-inflammatory diet. Maybe we could use that as a starting point. What does that mean for somebody that doesn't know much about nutrition? Maybe you, before you were 34, younger days, what would you say? What should they be eating on the anti-inflammatory diet as a preventative?
So first of all, we start a diet called the elimination diet. So we will remove the five inflammatory food groups. Gluten/wheat, so that's bread and pasta and, your pizza base. And then we remove caffeine, alcohol, sugar, and dairy. And most people, when I give them that list of five food groups, they look at me in shock with their eyes wide open going, well, what am I supposed to eat then? And you go, lots of fruit and vegetables. And if you eat meat, you know, and you're not a vegetarian or a vegan, loads of good quality grass-fed protein sources. So you've got the five inflammatory food groups. So most of the time they look at me and say, well, what am I going to eat? And I generally give people a meal plan to guide them. I could use some examples now to really help some of your audience if some things are some things are resonating with them and they're thinking, oh, I'd like to try that, but how do I do that? Because these food groups are quite ingrained within our Western society. Hmm. So I encourage people, you know, for a breakfast to have eggs or a smoothie, and then perhaps for lunch, a salad with chicken or fish protein sauce, you know, could be a tin of tuna, keep it simple. Or you could add some chickpeas or lentils to your salad. And then in the evening, you know, quite a balanced meal of a piece of grass-fed meat or organic chicken breast that could be served with some nice potatoes or some rice and lots of vegetables and lots of salad or, you know, depending on what your preferences are and what you're making. But it's quite simple. And then for snacks, you can stick to things like rice cakes with hummus or, you know, a chopped cucumber, chopped carrot sticks or a handful of nuts and seeds with some satsumas or a banana or an apple. The one thing people come back and say to me is I forgot that I should be eating fruit. And going through this diet, I realise how much I love fruit. I love vegetables. And this diet has really, really encouraged me to eat much more fruit and vegetables because you don't have all the other stuff to go and snack on. And yeah, their bodies just become so much healthier with so much more nutrition going in.
It's good for people to have that framework. Now, how would that affect how their body works? Somebody might have a hormone-derived illness, or they have issues with detoxification, or they have a specific condition. How does that affect that?
So once we take out the five inflammatory food groups, it will reduce inflammation everywhere in the body. It doesn't really tend to sort of target just the shoulder or the back or the big toe. It will just reduce inflammation everywhere in the body. So the way the body works is when you are in pain, it's generally the body's way of telling you that that area is inflamed. So we're working on that. But another wonderful process is it, when we do the elimination diet, can really clean the liver. So the liver isn't fighting inflammation all the time. So then the liver can then work to get rid of some of the other stuff that needs to come out. For example, you mentioned hormones. So by lightening the load of all the other work that the liver has to do, it can then go, oh, I can focus on hormones now because I'm not worrying about inflammation and trying to bring the body back to balance or homeostasis, as we would say. And therefore, then it can go, oh, there's excess hormones here. Let's go and get those and let's clean those up and get some of the excesses out by the liver or via, you know, some of our waste pathways. Plus, what I really see as well is motility improve. So sometimes you might see a client and they poo every 2-3 days. And, you know, we've just had in the press this week, haven't we, that lovely, lovely lady, I can't think of her name, but she was only 40, who died of bowel cancer.
Yeah.
You know, the importance of pooing. And I find that once you take out the five inflammatory food groups, people's motility improve, and they get more regular, and they tend to go daily again and not every 3 days. And a lot of the time, the irritants can be gluten or dairy, not all the time, but the majority of the time. And again, you know, making the whole digestive system inflamed, and we're reducing that inflammation so it can work better and do its job to take out the nutrients and then flush out the, you know, the waste that needs to be eliminated via our poo.
Yeah, I guess because all of these things could then lead on to chronic disease, and that's why it's so important to get things moving. And with inflammation, we want to reduce that, because we know now, Victoria, don't we, that inflammation is normally at the root cause of most chronic diseases.
Yes.
So put that anti-inflammatory diet in, then you reduce that chance of developing something. You reduce the risk, and ultimately you just do that through food before it becomes a problem and disease manifests in the body, because you know the body's changing all the time, isn't it?
Yes. I mean, there isn't one cell in your body. I always try and get this across to clients. We're like running water, and not one cell in the body every second is the same as what it was a second ago. And in 1 year's time, not one cell in your body, what, 365 days later, will be the same as what it was a year ago. So in 1 year, all our, what have we got, something like 40 trillion cells or something? I can't remember the specifics, but say, for argument's sake, let's say it's 40 trillion cells. Not one of those cells in 1 year's time will be the same. So as we're kind of, the cells are dying off and new cells are coming in and being made, you want to make sure that those new cells coming in are getting the right nutrition to keep them healthy. You do want to put the petrol into the petrol car and not the diesel car, so your body just keeps operating, you know, correctly. And you're right about chronic disease and inflammation. It's a huge driver. And even to depression, you know, one of the things that they found in depression is inflammation within the brain.
Yes, definitely. I wish more people knew about this. We'll be back to talk a lot more about preventative health and how to do it after a few messages from our commercial partners.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
You're listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio, talking to Victoria Godfrey, ex-award-winning producer, naturopathic nutritionist, trained in cancer, and now working in nutrigenomics and founder of DNAPal.me. Now, Victoria, we're talking about preventative health and how it's better than cure and how we should do it. And we talked about the anti-inflammatory diet as the first step for people to really just make sure that when they're eating it, eat three times a day, they're using their food as medicine. So that's how we should be thinking about our food. I'd love to move on to the next steps of preventative health as well, and maybe ask what your opinion is on chemicals and how we can cover that into this topic, because it seems that there are a lot of pesticides and chemicals around now, and my concern is obviously that can affect us. They can be chemicals from our foods or from the air. How can we keep those at bay?
Yes, so keeping chemicals, we've got, to give you some perspective, there are 85,000 known toxins in our environment right now. In early 1900, there was only 2,000. So in 100 years, our planet now has another 83,000 toxins. These are added to body products, cleaning products, non-stick frying pans that play around with hormones, pesticides. I think there was one grape I saw with EWG where they test the organic and non-organic produce once a year to look at the levels of chemicals and pesticides. On one grape, they found 90 different chemicals on a grape. Oh, now, your body still has to process that. It still has to get rid of that waste via the liver into the poo. You know, that's a lot. You're sitting there eating all your grapes thinking you're being so healthy, and you've got, you know, a lot more chemicals going into your body as well as those grapes. Then you've got the body products. I think in a toothpaste, there's Triclosan, yes.
Yeah.
Which is a toxin related to mouth cancer. Same as in some of the sunblocks that we use. Some of those have cancer-causing carcinogens, chemicals in them. And the list goes on. Same with the cleaning products, you know, bleach and various other cleaning chemicals are pretty toxic. You only need to look at the hazardous signs on the bottles to realise that that's not something that you're ever going to want to drink or ingest. So our skin is our biggest organ. So even when we're cleaning with these products and we're not using plastic gloves or any gloves for protection, that will be soaking through the skin straight into the bloodstream. That will still go around all the body and the liver still has to process that and to get rid of that. Now, if our liver is overloaded because we're doing lots of other wrong things at the same time, drinking too much alcohol or too much stress in our lives, it might not be detoxifying all of these chemicals very well. And again, that's going to make your body quite sick.
So when we're thinking preventative health, it's not just what we're eating. We've got to remember, as you said, it's what's going into our skin, because that can soak into our body, into our bloodstream. And as you say, we still need to deal with those chemicals and it's a burden. Yeah. So what do? You use natural products?
So for the pesticides, if I can't afford organic or I can't find a certain, I mean, I can afford organic. What I meant to say, sometimes I can't always find the produce organic, or sometimes I can find it organic, but it's, you know, might be very expensive or something. So I wash it. I soak everything in bicarbonate of soda with water. And can I just add to the bicarbonate of soda, the one without aluminium, which you can get, but check and read the labels, because some bicarb have aluminium and then you're going to be adding to the heavy metal load. And so I wash the non-organic vegetables with the bicarb or soak it. Sometimes I use apple cider vinegar, but I find that makes the food a little bit more mushy, you know, which isn't great if you're trying to give your kids some strawberries and they've all gone mushy because you've soaked them. And then for all my body products are bought via a health food shop. So they're not toxic. And then the cleaning products, I use white wine vinegar, bicarbonate of soda, and I'll use essential oils for the smell to cover up the smell from the white wine vinegar. And that works really, really well. You can do like a little thing in your toilet where you pour the vinegar and then you can add the bicarb and it creates quite a volcano kind of explosion. But put your brush in there, have a good scrub around. It's perfect and we're not harming anyone or yourself.
I love it. And then you just put in the essential oils for a nicer smell so your house doesn't smell of vinegar.
Yes, so you don't smell like a fish and chip shop.
Do you sunbathe, Vicky, or do you actually put a non-toxic sunscreen in? Because some people think, you know, sunbathing is great for your immunity because you get vitamin D. Other people are worried about the sun because they think it leads to skin cancer. And then they're putting these sun creams on them. But now we hear that maybe the sun creams are toxic for us. So what are your thoughts on this?
So in all the research that I've done, and I have this wonderful app called Yuka, Y-U-K-A, And I don't get any sponsorship from it or anything. So I know we're on a radio show, but just to share what I use. So I'm not affiliated with Yucca or anything, but it's fabulous. It will scan your food products. It will scan your body products and it will tell you what's in them. And then it will give you whether it's hazardous. It will give you a red or medium risk or low risk. And then when you go to more info, it tells you exactly what it does to the body. So I use that sometimes to scan certain products and things. In terms of your specific thing for the vitamin D question, as I see that, I do go out in the sun. I do believe vitamin D is part of your innate, well, it is, not believe, it is part of our innate immune system. And what that means, if you've never heard that terminology of innate immune system, it just means that your baseline immune system will not work without vitamin D. So the sun is very important for your body to get vitamin D. Now, burning is not very good for the body. So it's about being sensible with the sunshine. So early morning sunshine is supposed to be, those UV rays that come through are supposed to be really, really powerful. There's also a big spiritual connection. So where I was learning yoga and doing yoga teacher training and been to India so many times. In India, it's very big that you get up for sunrise and you do yoga to sunrise and you connect to the sun rising because it's also really good at resetting melatonin through the eyes. And melatonin is one of the major, major antioxidants within the body. So wearing sunglasses can block the melatonin. But if you, coming back to the Yucca app, if you scan a sun product, you'll be able to see whether it's got any dangerous toxic chemicals in, which most mainstream do. I would never use the mainstream on myself or my children or my partner and you know, all of my family know not to. On the occasions where we know we're out in the sunshine all day and the sun's going to be very, very hot, then I would use an organic, shop-bought organic suntan lotion. I have seen things about raspberry seed oil and coconut oil and zinc oxide and things like that that are supposed to be great as kind of homemade sunscreens. But I just haven't found the time to try it. So I'm still very much, I pick the hours that I go into the sunshine. I do get the sun because my genetically, my vitamin D receptors don't work so well. So I have to have extra sun. I have to eat foods that contain vitamin D. So I have to take a little bit more care to make sure that my vitamin D levels are good anyway. So if I then suddenly put toxic things onto my skin and block the sun completely, I think I'd be a lot sicker. Yeah. Because everyone that died, not everybody, but when you go through the data of what happened with the pandemic that we've just been through, there was some, one of the studies that I read, I think it was by sciencedirect.com, was 81% of people who had, who didn't, you know, how to increase more, you know, didn't make it, deceased, all had low levels of vitamin D.
Yeah.
So their bodies wasn't able to fight the respiratory virus.
The trajectory of the virus really depends on your state of health and your nutrition. And that people that had these inflammatory conditions like obesity,
yes,
these cardiovascular disease, these were the ones that unfortunately weren't doing well.
It's the same in cancer as well. When you go through the data and the studies available for cancer, vitamin D plays quite a big part in, or low deficiency of vitamin D plays quite a bit part in the people that have cancer. You can see a correlation, whether it's causation, I wouldn't be able to comment, but in terms of correlation, there's definitely enough data to show that, you know, cancer and vitamin D deficiency, there's a correlation there, which makes sense to me because if a tumour is growing, it's the immune system that helps to keep some of your body within check. So if vitamin D is part of your innate baseline immune system, how's it going to be able to keep anything in check?
It's not going to be. If somebody was supplementing, maybe they're living in a country where there isn't much sun throughout the year, maybe one of the Northern European countries, something like that, and they were supplementing vitamin D as a preventative, would you be adding vitamin K to that as well to aid absorption? Because there's a lot of information out there right now on that.
Yeah, so the recommendations that I was trained with and what I do, I take a drop through winter, which is D3 plus K2. Because K2 works as the cofactor to the D3. So I only supplement through winter. I'm not a big believer of everybody taking a supplement every single day. You know, in the old days, you'd really say, look, you can get everything from food. But now our soil's been destroyed quite a bit by the pesticides. So it leaves our soil more deficient. But in terms of vitamin D, they say oily fish, mushrooms, and there's one other group that's very important that's completely lost my eggs. So eggs, mushrooms, and oily fish are also very good. Supposed to be good sources to help within vitamin D.
It's good to know. And it's good to know about this K2 as a cofactor, because some people now are just indiscriminately supplementing vitamin D because there's a lot of publicity about it. Just supplementing vitamin D, it's a bit too much for a monotherapy, and you could get a buildup of calcium in your arteries.
Yes.
So for anybody that is considering doing vitamin D supplementation, put in some K2 as well. Get a combined supplement, and then you know that it's going to be absorbed in the right way by the body and used, rather than, you know, depositing calcium.
And what was fab for me is, obviously, I love nutrigenomics and genetics as well. So knowing that my vitamin D receptors don't work so well on my skin made me go and get a vitamin D test. So when did COVID hit? Around March 2020. So the end of that summer, after a summer of sunshine and looking quite brown and tanned, not like dark brown or anything, but, you know, just a light, healthy tan, I went to the doctors to get tested for my vitamin D levels to see what it was saying. And after summer of sun, I was borderline deficient, which really surprised me. And had I not done the genetic test to show me that my receptors don't work so good, I wouldn't have known to go and get tested. And then I was borderline, I knew then to supplement all winter, which I did. And touch wood, and I am going to touch wood, you know, COVID's been around 2.5 years, and I've been lucky enough not to have experienced it yet. Not even going to say yet, to have not experienced it.
I have had it, and you just didn't know because you're...
Yes, could have been asymptomatic.
A lot of kids were getting it because their parents were testing them all the time, but they didn't actually have it. They weren't manifesting all the symptoms because their immune system was keeping it in check. And
yes,
so we shouldn't be so scared of getting things. We should be scared of really not treating our body well, because if you get something, that's when you're not going to be able to deal with it, because you're not well nourished and your immune system isn't working well.
Yeah, and also when we come down to gut bacteria as well, gut bacteria in the gut for your immune system, you know, is hugely, hugely important too. And just to show you the power of food, if I can share this quick story, if you don't mind. A colleague... he tested his gut bacteria via a stool test, and they were all wonderful. You know, he looked after his gut bacteria. And then he decided to eat some junk food. I won't name the brand, but he ate junk food 3 times a day, morning, lunch and dinner, from a high street for 3 weeks. 3 weeks, breakfast, lunch and dinner from the same establishment of burgers and chips. And he absolutely, then he tested at the end of the 3 weeks, he destroyed his all the bacteria within his gut. It then took him 8 months to repopulate his gut again with a probiotic protocol to get back to the same levels he was before he embarked on his own little study on himself. So again, you know, the good bacteria, which really helps support the immune system as well as the vitamin D, also needs food, so which is called a prebiotic. And by putting sort of the wrong foods in, and, you know, processed foods and junk food and things like that, the healthy bacteria can't stay alive because it's got nothing to feed on.
Yeah.
So it all dies because it wasn't being fed.
We are not just feeding ourselves, we're feeding our bacteria.
Yeah.
Sometimes when you're craving that sugary donut, it's your bacteria that are out of balance that want more sugar because they're feeding off it. So you want to give it the right kind of substrate so that the good bacteria can grow and overtake the bad bacteria. And obviously they're involved in immunity. And this is what relates to preventative health. We have to look after our gut. We'll be back to talk a lot more about this, all the things that can make your body sick and how we can address those as a preventative measure so that we stay healthy.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Listening to Dora Walsh on UK Health Radio on my weekly show, Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing. I'm here with Victoria Godfrey, ex-award-winning producer, naturopathic nutritionist, trained in cancer and now working in nutrigenomics, and co-founder of DNAPal.me, DNAPal.me. Definitely check them out for your genetic tests, especially on the topic of preventative health. We can talk a bit about that, Kate. But before we go on to that, tell me about mold, heavy metals, mycotoxins, because a lot of people probably don't think about this and how it can potentially lead to chronic disease. And then also what to do to make sure that you're not exposed and even to get these toxic things out of your body. What should people be doing?
Yeah, so mycotoxins are, if you've never heard of that term before, because some people might not have, are poisonous substances that are produced by fungi or mold. So if you're living in a damp house or things like that, or have any mold patches, it's very likely that those patches are full of mycotoxins. And they're just toxic for humans when they're eaten or absorbed into the skin or inhaled. And poisoning by mycotoxins is called mycotoxicosis. Sorry, these long words always get me into a little bit of a tongue twister. So they're just not really great for the body. You know, they make the cells sick. It's the body's still got to process it. And it's, you know, with mold, I did look into mold quite recently, actually, because where I live, our house is quite moldy. And the area that I live there's a lot of damp because we're by the sea. And the salt water seems to get into the houses. And so quite a few people have been getting in touch with me over the last 6 months about the mold in their houses, how they can do it. So I went quite deep into the research for mycotoxins and mold and things like that. And it literally was about making sure your detox pathways are optimized so your body can deal with it. I couldn't find a solution of like any substances that you could bond to help try and get rid of it out of your body so easily. So again, it comes back to the liver, making sure that your liver is really clean and healthy and that you're not overloading your liver unnecessarily. So then it can deal with the other things within your environment.
I'm seeing mycotoxin illness as a real growing problem, Vicky, in London. I'm seeing a lot of people that are coming to me with something called a mast cell activation syndrome, but then I've got a mycotoxin questionnaire, all the symptoms of mycotoxin illness. And then I realize when they fill out the questionnaire, really their mast cell activation syndrome, which is a syndrome where people are just allergic to everything, is actually because they are actually being exposed to mold. And this is really sensitizing their immune system.
So yeah, that makes sense.
So I'm seeing this, and I think there are a lot of people being exposed to mold. Sometimes you can't even smell mold and it's in your house and it can lead to illnesses. And sometimes you can. So if you do have mold, I think the key is you've got to get that remediated, get it addressed, because it can lead to so many health problems that we don't really connect with the mold. Things like brain fog, tiredness, weight
gain. Yeah, I was going to say fatigue, weight gain, yeah.
Indeed, athlete's foot, tiredness, depression, anxiety, even a feeling of like internal vibration. And people don't realize actually they're actually suffering mold sickness. They just think they've got chronic fatigue, or they're being treated for fibromyalgia. Root of it. Sometimes it's mycotoxin illness, and it's these molds are everywhere. So it's so important as a preventative measure to make sure you kind of don't have it in your house.
I also learned on the cancer training that I did peanuts. Peanuts have mycotoxins on them because of the way they're grown, and they're actually not nuts, they're legumes. They sit within the legume family. Yeah. And that, you know, if you're battling chronic disease, you know, don't eat. Nuts are wonderful sources, but just not peanuts because of the way they're grown. Yeah.
They've got molds on them. Let's read about in our last few minutes about a DNA. Very interested. I know that you're the co-founder of DNAPal.me. And you provide genetic tests to people, and you have something else coming up, another service soon. But how, because I know you said that understanding that your vitamin D receptors weren't working well, and you understood this from a genetic perspective, this helped you to improve your health because you knew what you needed to do as a preventative measure to avoid sickness, because you have to supplement it. What else can people identify from genetic tests that can help them to prevent chronic disease in the future?
So the other gene that I absolutely love, which again, I've got a red, so I've got high impact. It's all about me. My GSTM1. And I know that sounds like gobbledygook, because it's like, what the hell does GSTM1 mean? But it's a liver detox pathway and how the body makes glutathione. So my pathway doesn't work very well. So to support that pathway, that detoxification pathway, which means that can help me get rid of the mold or the heavy metals in my body or things like that, I have to eat at like about 8 to 10 cruciferous vegetables per day to really optimize my detox pathways within the liver and make sure that my waste that could build up and make my body quite sick, which is some of the points we touched upon at the beginning, I just have to really keep working on that. And I can tell, because when my liver is under stress, I smell under my armpits and I get body odor, and I don't really wear deodorant anymore much. And when my liver's all really clean and not overloaded, then I just walk around with no deodorant, can exercise and everything, and I don't have any body odor, if that makes sense. So I've really got in tune with my body, learning about my liver, how it works. The other thing for preventative health is we look at methylation, your MTHFR gene, which is really important to whether you can convert folic acid to folate, whether you have an increased need of green leafy veg within your diet. And methylation pathways also work on estrogen, so helping to remove estrogen from the body. So if your methylation pathway is compromised, then you might have more trouble balancing your hormones, and you might make you more predominant to being estrogen dominant. So that's just, you know, just vitamin D. Then we look at B12, whether you can absorb B12 through the stomach. Maybe injections of B12 might be better for you. We look at vitamin A, whether you can convert vitamin A from beta carotene across to retinol or retinic acid, which is a different form of vitamin A. And it looks at your sleep, it looks at your fitness, the best way to train, looks at injuries for tendons and ligaments, genetically, how your body works. And then all the advice is how to support yourself. So if your collagen isn't very good, we would suggest some vitamin C daily just to help support your body to make to produce more collagen, or nitric oxide for heart health, because, you know, we want to all keep our hearts healthy. Whether eating fish a couple of times a week, oily fish is enough to help you produce the nitric oxide you need to keep your heart healthy. or whether you need to supplement with some omega-3s. And then in the men's health report, which I find quite fascinating, there's a lot about prostate enlargement and things like that, that men can actually do quite a bit preventative health-wise for their, you know, they also have a stage like us women do at a certain age where their body and their hormones change. So again, the advice is very much to put support in to minimise any of those risks.
You know, with that access to data about the genetic level, we can understand what we're dealing with, so and we can create a plan specifically tailored to where we are in our genetics. Our genetics never change, so it gives us confidence that we're doing everything to prevent disease in the future, optimizing our health and our life.
Yes, I mean, I absolutely love it, and especially from that preventative health, because having worked with some of the chronic diseases that I've seen and how hard the person has to work to turn everything around, which generally they do and have done, it doesn't work for everybody. Some people give up. Some people go, oh, I can't do that, you know, and they have a bigger battle. Whereas if you're doing the preventative, it's much gentler. You might not have to go as hard, you know, and these changes don't happen overnight. I've been making changes since 2012, since I started studying, you know. It's like last 10 years, I take something out of the cupboard and I might scan it and I go, okay, right, that's never coming back into our family again, using the Yucca app. And then I'll replace it next time with something healthier. So as just time goes on, I don't have any toxic body products or hair products, you know, everything that's in my cupboards has no, you know, carcinogenic E numbers or, you know, things like that. So it's not, definitely not an overnight thing, but it's just something that you constantly keep working on and preventing. And the more awareness I think you get around these subjects helps you. If it's a long word and you can't pronounce it, it generally means that your body's not going to like it.
A real pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully you'll come on the show again. I could talk to you all day. For anyone that's interested, they can contact Victoria at dnapower.me. And it's been wonderful talking on the show this week. Please look out for us next week on Nutrition for Health, Perfect Weight and Wellbeing on UK Health Radio, your global feel-good radio.